setting Unbroken Horizons. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead, we speak with Jacksonville's own star student and LGBTQ icon, Seth Owen, about his quest to help young people like himself. You can join us. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later this month marks the 50th anniversary of the historic moon landing, how you can learn more from the PBS series Chasing the Moon. Plus, Cole Pepper with a look at the U.S. women's soccer team's World Cup victory, an amazing moment in sports. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, he's the Jacksonville Star student who was shunned by his local family for being gay. Seth Owen was facing homelessness, and he had no ability to pay for college, even though he'd been accepted to Georgetown University and was the valedictorian of his class. But then something amazing happened. A friend put Seth's story online and raised more than $165,000 from donors around the world to send him to university. Seth also appeared on the Ellen DeGeneres Show. Take a listen.
You were the valedictorian of your senior class. Now you're a freshman at Georgetown, and you're an amazing young man. I can't believe your story. And it's never easy for anyone to come out to their parents. That is a really difficult thing to do, but especially hard for yours, right?
It was. About the valedictorian part, I have to give you all the credit for that. When I was writing my papers at 2 a.m., I often had to look up your videos for inspiration.
Thank you.
So not only did Seth go to Georgetown, the Ellen Show, guess what? He decided to come back to Jacksonville for the summer. And he's made it his mission to help other LGBTQ youth. His Unbroken Horizons Scholarship Foundation holds its inaugural event this week in Jacksonville. We've got a preview right now as Seth Owen joins us here in studio. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Good to have you back on the show. And as we talk about Unbroken Horizons, we want your calls and questions for Seth Owen. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and tweets to @MelissaInJax. Our Facebook page is open too. Okay, so it's great to have you back on the show. Let's go back to the beginning. For those who aren't familiar with your story, it went viral after a supportive teacher set up a GoFundMe for you, and that got you to Georgetown University because your parents refused to help pay for your education. What was your first year like at Georgetown?
It was wonderful. I had a lot of adjusting to do, that's for sure, but it has been a wonderful experience, and I can definitely call DC home. I absolutely love walking down the streets in DC.
What do you love about it?
The freedom to, you know, to express myself in DC and stopping on the sidewalk and seeing a motorcade pass by with some official in the car. It's a place that's always full of action and full of a lot of interesting people and interesting stories.
And you said the freedom to express yourself is so important for you. You didn't have that freedom here in Jacksonville. Your parents didn't accept you. In fact, they sort of disowned you when you came out to them. But what was so incredible was your story then went viral and you've become an icon in the LGBTQ community. What has that experience been like for you?
It was a scary, wild ride when I first got started sharing my story. I was not open to the idea of sharing my story, but I was told by a coach that I was given a platform and not every student in my situation is given one, and it was my responsibility to speak out. And so I did, and I don't regret it, because I've had so many folks reach out and thank me for having the courage to share my story, and that my story gave them some inspiration, because unfortunately they're going through the same thing. So it's definitely worth it.
In fact, just a few weeks ago, we were reminded of this here in Jacksonville, about students like yourself who often face a difficult journey. Just a few weeks ago, the Jacksonville Public Library canceled a pride prom for LGBTQ kids. They were worried about safety for the children, and they faced a real backlash. What was your reaction to that?
I was disappointed because Jacksonville has a responsibility to let their students know that they are welcome here and that they belong. And by, you know, canceling this event, it was displaying that they do not believe that children who are LGBTQ plus have a place here. And that's false because they do.
And in fact, it was a church that agreed to host the Pride prom when the library canceled it. There are a number of responses different faith communities have toward the LGBTQ community. Your family of origin didn't accept you because of their religion. And so I'm curious to ask you, are you still a religious person? How do you look at faith now today?
So I'm not a religious person. And personally, I don't believe that any one religion got it right, but I'm still a very spiritual person. And I have my own spiritual journey, and I express that through many different ways, and I take pieces from different religions, and it's definitely, it brings me a lot of peace to be able to walk into a church that I know accepts me. And in DC, we have quite a few. It's been a remarkable experience to walk into a church and my identities, all of them, be accepted and appreciated in a place of worship.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Jacksonville student Seth Owen, kicked out of his parents' home for being gay. He couch surfed for a while. Then a supportive teacher set up a GoFundMe for him so that he could pay for tuition at Georgetown University. Seth has gone on to start a foundation and Broken Horizons. We'll talk about that in just a moment and take your calls as well at 549-2937. Now, you're back in town for your event, but we'll talk about that in a moment. I want to ask you about your parents. What's your relationship with them like now?
It's a very complicated relationship that, you know, that's definitely for sure. But because I still have a lot of love for my parents, I can't distance myself, you know, completely from them. And I've talked to a lot of therapists about this, that's for sure, you know. And it's hard to prioritize my mental health. But I still communicate with my parents.
And have they come around to being more accepting?
No, they haven't.
And they haven't.
I can't expect them to. That would be me asking them to deny their religious beliefs.
But they still speak to you?
Yes. Yeah, we still speak.
So it's complicated, it sounds like.
Very complicated.
What would you say to other parents out there who have a gay or lesbian or trans child and they don't have acceptance and love for that child?
You know, I was told by Frida Saraga, she's the leader of PFLAG Jacks here in Jacksonville, and she had 5 children, 3 of whom were gay, and she said it was hard to be a parent of, gay children. And I never realized that until a parent told me that, you know, and although it's hard, I think that it's important to realize they're still your children and you should do everything you can to make sure they have joy in their life and that they are safe and healthy and happy. And if that means they're gay or they're queer or they're trans, you should still love them just the same because they are wonderful humans, just as the rest of us.
And that's why you set up your foundation. It's called Unbroken Horizons. Tell us about it.
So we started Unbroken Horizons after my story went viral and I took a look at this larger problem of LGBTQ plus homelessness. And 40% of the young population of homeless kids are LGBTQ identifying. And that doesn't take into account the kids who refuse to express their identities because of discrimination in homeless shelters. However, there are 40% of the homeless youth that identify as LGBTQ, and 50%, roughly 50% of those are homeless because of family rejection. That's a really, really large number. 50% of those kids are homeless because of family rejection.
And now you were part of that statistic.
Unfortunately, and I am not alone. And so as someone who's received so much support and as a white perceived cisgender male in this society, I've received additional support. I feel that it's my personal responsibility to give back. And I am so glad that I have started that journey and I won't stop giving back, that's for sure. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey to start this foundation over this past year while in college.
Unbroken Horizons Scholarship Foundation will host its inaugural banquet Friday night at Casa Marina in Jacksonville Beach. You'll give 5 local students scholarships. This is to help LGBTQ plus youth of all backgrounds further their education, which is your story too. Someone reached out a hand to help you so that you could further your education.
Mm-hmm. That is true. And I think one thing that really sets us apart from other LGBTQ plus scholarships is that we give scholarships to folks who are also headed to tech, career and technical education schools, whether that's, you know, cosmetology school or hairstyling school or carpentry school, although that's something I would never go to because I'm not good working outside. But, you know, we acknowledge that folks are on different paths in their journey and that a career or technical education school might be best for them and might be what they, the post-secondary education they want to pursue. And a lot of scholarships leave them behind.
Okay. Now you are at Georgetown University. Mm-hmm. You will be a sophomore in the fall, a rising sophomore. Once you graduate, what are your career plans? What do you want to do?
Once I graduate, I would love to come on full time at the foundation. And then eventually, when I'm old enough, I would love to run for the House of Representatives.
Run for Congress.
Run for Congress. Absolutely.
And will you run from Northeast Florida?
Absolutely. I've got to represent my home district. This is the place that I grew up. This is the place that I know well. And these are my people. And we need proper representation in the U.S. House of Representatives.
And by we, you mean LGBTQ people? Or just do you feel that you would be representing a wider swath of people?
I really think that I would be representing a wider swath of people here in Jacksonville, you know, because we have so many stories and we have so many folks who aren't valued currently on the floors of Congress by certain members in the Florida delegation.
So you want to become a member of the Florida delegation, and that's an interesting career path for you, given your story so far. And let's go to some calls now for Seth Owen. If you're just tuning in, the Jacksonville valedictorian who was initially shunned by his parents and kicked out of the house for not being part of their discriminatory church has gone on to become an icon around the world. $165,000 flowed in at a GoFundMe account to enable Seth to attend the school of his choice, Georgetown University, where he is a rising sophomore. And this Friday, he will head the Unbroken Horizons Scholarship Foundation banquet, an inaugural event to benefit other students like himself. What are your thoughts, questions, comments? It's 549-2937. Chuck is at the beaches. Hi, Chuck. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to tell, I think his gentleman's name is Seth. Just wanted to tell him I'm a man of faith. And Seth, I love you. And you can do anything you want. And I saw the movie Elton John, The Rocket Man. And it was addressed. This issue was addressed. And it really brings it home. And Seth, just like Elton John, you can be anything you want. Thanks.
Thanks, Chuck. Thanks for that. I saw that movie too. That it's interesting he brings that up because we learned a lot about Elton John and we learned a lot about his journey to self-acceptance as a gay man. And when a celebrity goes through that very publicly, it's I think it helps a lot of people have greater compassion and understanding for their loved ones and their colleagues and people they know in their local community, like you.
Visibility definitely matters. And it's hard for those who are in the spotlight, but visibility matters for those who are just finding themselves and learning how to express their true identities. And to Chuck, I want to say thank you for being a person of faith and being openly welcoming. It is really important for kids like me who have grown up in these situations to be able to see folks of faith who are accepting and loving. So thank you, Chuck. And thank you to those who share Chuck's values and beliefs.
You know, it's really remarkable to watch the way this community has dealt with this issue over time. The whole battle, long drawn out discussion and debate over updating the city's human rights ordinance, this recent flap over the Pride Prom at the library, And there have been other kind of flashpoint moments. And so a lot of kids like you leave, honestly, and they don't ever come back. Why do you want to come back?
I want to come back because there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of work to be done, and I am not, let me rephrase that. I am scared of a challenge, but I'm willing to, you know, dive in head first and face the challenge. You know, Dr. Brené Brown, the vulnerability TED talker, she spoke a lot about leaning into the difficult times and leaning into vulnerability. And I really try to express that in my professional career as well. You know, I have to go out there and take risk and go for the challenge, because if not, I'm losing out, you know?
Were you scared when you first hit the Georgetown campus?
I was so scared. I was so scared. My coach who took me up there and moved me in, they dropped me off. And when they left, I was like, oh, I'm all on my own here.
That's right.
but there was plenty of reading to keep me occupied.
Right. It's scary, I think, for any college freshman. But you didn't have the parental support. You had some other caring adults in your life, but your parents weren't right there behind you. Mm-hmm. I would think that would make it even exponentially harder. And so that took real courage.
It also took a real toll on my mental health. And that's something that I was ashamed of at first. But I think that it's important for folks to take care of themselves and to not be ashamed by mental health challenges.
Do you feel a burden now for being this visible icon? Is that a heavy weight for you to carry? You're only 19 years old.
It's not a heavy weight for me to carry. I just continue to live authentically, and I found that that is extremely easy. And I don't worry about the image.
How do you think your image is? What do you think your image is to others?
Well, I hope that it's a positive one.
Yeah, I think it is. And it's 549-2937 as we talk with Seth Owen about his Unbroken Horizons Scholarship Banquet, which is coming up this Friday night at the Casa Marina Hotel in Jacksonville Beach. You can go to unbrokenhorizons.org, and let's go to a few of your calls. 549-2937. Ireland is on the line. Ireland, good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Hi, Seth. How are you guys doing?
Good. Go ahead.
So I am a young gay activist in Jackson, too. So I started the GSA at my school at Fletcher. And so coming from this background, I have plenty of friends who had similar experiences you did, Seth. So I was just curious how a person who's gone through that, how do you think I should be able to assist my friends whose parents either kick them out, have been rejected, or their parents are refusing to, like, assist them in their college financing?
Thanks for that question.
I think that it's important to, first of all, always show them love and support through this entire journey. I think that it's important to encourage them to stay in a safe space. It's not easy moving out, and I would never encourage another student to move out of their parents' home, because once doing so, you put yourself at risk and become so vulnerable with unfortunate folks around us who are looking to take advantage of kids. But I would continue to love and support them. If you have a spare room, offer it to them. I still live in the spare room of my best friend who in high school gave me a place to stay after.
That's where you're staying when you're back here in town.
In Jacksonville, yes. And also the folks at Jasmine are wonderful people who have resources available for students in these situations. And they're our friends at Jasmine. And also I would encourage you all to reach out to Unbroken Horizons staff. We have on our volunteer staff advocacy and student support directors. And so wherever students are located, they can send us an email, and we will work with our team to make sure that they find the resources necessary wherever they are located.
And people can donate to unbrokenhorizons.org. After your appearance on Ellen, you were able to raise a lot of money, but of course you want to expand what you're doing.
Absolutely. There are so many kids out there that need our assistance. And we also want to expand our programming, not just to scholarships, but for mental health and for mentorship and paid internships. So we'd really like to accommodate the needs of, you know, LGBTQ students in college and career technical education schools.
Here's a comment on our Facebook page from Susan asking about Florida becoming the first state to introduce legislation to ban conversion therapy, which is a debunked method falsely claiming to be able to change a young person's sexual orientation or gender identity. That did, I believe, go through the Florida House. I don't believe it was enacted into law. There have also been statewide attempts in the legislature to pass discrimination protection measures for LGBTQ people around the state, particularly in the workplace. That has not yet been enacted into law in Florida either. And so as these efforts work their way through the state legislative process, are those kinds of measures what are driving you to seek a career in politics, the need to work through the political process to make society more equitable and safer for everyone?
Absolutely. I mean, it's 2019. I'm 19 years old. And while I was in high school here in Jacksonville, before the Human Rights Ordinance, you know, was passed, I could have been fired because of my identity. And that was a scary thing that I had to face. And I was not comfortable with expressing myself at work as a cashier at a local grocery store, you know? So I think that we are way behind our times. And there is definitely a lot of work to be done. And there's a lot of protections that need to be passed for, you know, folks of all different identities, all different marginalized communities. And there's a lot of work still to be done for the LGBTQ plus community, especially here in Jacksonville and here in Florida.
Mm-hmm. So you think the Equality Act would be an important step?
Absolutely. The Equality Act is a very, very important first step.
Let's talk about what the Equality Act would do.
So the Equality Act would ban discrimination on a federal level there's, I believe, four different items that it, you know, I know jury duty is included in it. It protects folks at jobs, in their jobs, and anything that receives federal money, the Equality Act would protect LGBTQ plus folks. But I think that's important to realize, because I know that a lot of people will claim that LGBTQ plus folks are asking for additional protections, and that's not true. This would be an amendment to the civil rights legislation, which the ACLU has got on board with the Equality Act, this amendment, and it would extend protections to LGBTQ plus identifying folk.
As all of that happens at the federal and state level, let's once again mention that you are back in town to headline the Unbroken Horizons Scholarship Banquet this Friday night at Casa Marina in Jags Beach. You're going to have a keynote speaker, Kaylin Allen, star of Kaylin Reacts and OM Kaylin, as seen on Ellen and YouTube. There will be a lot happening Friday night. Tell us what people can expect.
I think that the first thing they can expect is a wonderful queer space that's going to be super affirming. And I mean, we're going to have Kaylin Allen there, you know. Hopefully one day that man will be my husband, but that's beside the point. Kaylin is wonderful. Kaylin is
a big following, yeah.
Kaylin is a 23-year-old star online, and now he works for Ellen, and it's really important because he is someone who is visible. And it's important for LGBTQ plus folk, particularly youth of color, to see Kaylin so successful at such a young age, and to see Kaylin, you know, able to openly express himself and defy gender roles with fashion and really just be a person filled with joy. I mean, that man has so much joy.
He's going to be a big draw, but so are you.
Oh, well, thank you.
You know, you both will be. So there'll be real celebrity appeal at this event, silent auction and lots of fun. And again, this will be a scholarship banquet honoring five local students with scholarships. How much do they each receive, by the way?
This year we're offering $2,500 scholarships to our five students. And I'd like to point out that Kaylin and I will be there, but most importantly, we'll have four of the five scholarship recipients. And they'll be sharing their story with the crowd, and I think that's super important. I've seen so many wonderful activists who have been given a platform literally take the mic and say, I'm passing it along to someone else who belongs to have this. And as a white cisgender male in Jacksonville, I've been given a platform, and I'm now going to pass that mic along to other folks who deserve to be heard as well.
Well, you can meet Seth, Kaylin Allen, and more Friday night at the Costa Marina Hotel in Jacksonville Beach. It's the inaugural Unbroken Horizons Scholarship Foundation Banquet. Get your tickets and information at unbrokenhorizons.org. And so for you, Seth, you'll have this event, and then before you know it, you'll be back in school. Sophomore year at Georgetown. And, you know, I know how hard that school is. And so I salute you. I know it's very difficult academically, and I wish you nothing but success. And I hope that you will keep us posted on how you're doing and drop back in here on the show sometime when you're back in town again.
Absolutely. Thank you again for having me.
Thank you. Again, unbrokenhorizons.org for more on Seth's foundation. And later in the hour, the U.S. women's soccer team wins the World Cup. Cole Pepper has a look at their incredible victory over the weekend in France. But up next, the story behind the story. We've got a preview of Chasing the Moon, which debuts tonight on PBS. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Keith Marks. Join me every Thursday evening at 11 p.m. for Avant Radio, a show of curious music for curious minds. Each show is themed, curated, and contextualized to explore new music. Come get curious on Thursdays at 11 on 89.9 FM.
Christina, what's on the front page of today's Times Union?
At the top of the page, Florida lawmakers made...
Around the country, volunteers are reading local newspapers to people with vision loss or print disabilities. Did you know WJCT has this service? On a special radio we provide, you'll get the Florida Times Union every day. Learn more at wjct.org/radio reading. With help from sponsors like Florida Eye Specialists, Radio Reading gives voice to the printed word.
Jazz, the Great American Songbook, and your favorite oldies on Relax Radio at midnight, only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world.
That sound means you're in the Electro Lounge, where fresh, down-tempo, chill-out, and new jazz music plays Monday through Saturday nights at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this month is a milestone. The date of July 20th, 2019 marks 50 years since Apollo 11 made its historic landing on the moon. PBS is telling that story in its new series, Chasing the Moon. It premieres tonight on WJCT Television. Take a listen.
This is the beginning of the most audacious undertaking that man has ever attempted.
It was a hard march.
There's always a possibility that catastrophic failure, of course.
The computer was overloading.
It was touch and go.
This will be the greatest and most complex exploration in man's history.
Okay, now we should be coming down the ladder now.
Everybody felt they had a piece of it. And they did.
You may think you know everything about the moon landing, but in this three-part series, you'll learn untold stories about how it took place, and we'll also reimagine the race to the moon for a new generation. I recently spoke about Chasing the Moon with its filmmaker, Robert Stone. Here's that conversation. Robert Stone, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It's hard to believe it's been 50 years since the moon landing, but I think there's a lot of anticipation for watching Chasing the Moon on PBS because you take a story that's familiar to so many Americans and tell it through new eyes. We're going to learn a lot watching this program, particularly what was going on politically in America at that time and why going to the moon was controversial. What did you learn when you researched this?
Well, I think one of the things that distinguishes Chasing the Moon from other documentaries that are out there now celebrating this anniversary is we really look at the entire race to the moon from its very beginnings at the end of World War II all the way up to Tranquility Base and beyond. And looking at it as a political and cultural and social phenomenon and seeing the context in which this whole adventure took place, growing out of ideas of science fiction and how science fiction then was presented as a near-term possible reality with new technologies, with rockets, and then the circumstances, political circumstances that came together that led Kennedy to make this audacious proposal to put a man on the moon before 1970. And just the context in which all that took place. And it was controversial. It was never, contrary to popular mythology, the space program, the race to the moon, was thought of as like a nice thing by most Americans, but most Americans didn't think it was worth the money. The only time the polling went above 50% on whether they thought the program was worthwhile financially was a brief blip during Apollo 8, the first mission around the moon in 1968. And of course, at Apollo 11. So, what's one of the fascinating untold stories of this whole project is how the effort to sustain public and political support for it over the better part of a decade was really, you know, it was as difficult a task as the technical task of getting to the moon.
Sure,
I think that's one of the great lessons of Apollo, you know, in going forward for a current generation.
Could that even happen today? If something didn't have above 50% approval, could you even get the funding and the support to do something like this again with government funding?
Well, even then, it was completely touch and go, which is something we highlight in the film. There were many instances along the way where it was believed that the program was going to not make its goal or be scuttled completely. I mean, within 6 weeks of Kennedy making his first proposal to put a man on the moon by the end of the decade, he went to Vienna and met with Soviet Premier Khrushchev and proposed that they do a joint mission to the moon because Kennedy was so appalled at the spiraling cost of the program. He thought that he wouldn't be able to sustain political support, and doing it as a joint mission was the only way to go. Khrushchev rejected that proposal. Kennedy made it again in the fall of 1963 in a little-known speech to the United Nations that we have in the film. And what we reveal in the film is about a month before Kennedy was assassinated, Khrushchev had accepted that proposal.
Oh, really? Now, what's interesting is that you interview the son of Nikita Khrushchev in this program, Sergei Khrushchev. How did you get that interview?
I knew Sergei from a previous film I'd done, and I knew that he not only was his father's son and was by his father's side throughout this entire period as his closest confidant and advisor, but Sergei was also a leading Soviet rocket engineer. And to my knowledge, he's never been interviewed for any documentary about the space program, which was kind of astonishing.
What does he say about what will we learn about his thoughts about his father working in a back channel way with Kennedy on going to the moon?
Well, so many things. I mean, Khrushchev initially rejected the idea because the Soviets only had a few missiles at that time, and they were presenting to the world like they were a huge military threat to the United States. Remember, Americans were, you know, digging fallout shelters and were terrified that the Soviets had thousands of missiles. They only had three or four. So he was afraid if they did a joint mission that this would all be revealed, that it was all just a fraud. But in 1963, they caught up significantly, and Khrushchev had also learned to trust and admire Kennedy from their experiences during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And both Kennedy and Khrushchev wanted to wind down the tensions of the Cold War, and they thought that this was a wonderful way to do it and save money along the way. You know, it's just a shame. You know, Kennedy was assassinated on November 22nd, 63, and Khrushchev was overthrown about 9 months later, and the project died.
Wow. Well, as we look ahead to the future of space travel in particular, as private companies are moving aggressively to innovate and take civilians into space, what are your thoughts about where this technology seems to be headed?
Well, I think one of the biggest impediments to human space travel in the years since Apollo is it's just so damned expensive. You know, people have compared it to like building an ocean liner and sailing across the Atlantic once and then sinking it. And that's kind of what the Saturn V was. So, and even the shuttle never lived up to the expectations of in terms of cost. So I think what Elon Musk in particular is doing, and others as well, is really, really dramatically bringing the cost down by recycling rockets. And they're putting their own money into this and trying to have a commercial venture on one side with space tourism and then their exploration ventures on the other that are financed by the space tourism. So I think it's fantastic. It's inspiring. I don't think it's necessarily something that the federal government should necessarily be supporting in the way that it did for Apollo. I think that, you know, times have changed. And I don't think the public would be really interested in that. We've got a lot of other problems here on Earth. But I think it's great that they're doing it, and it's inspiring, and it just shows, you know, we can really do anything technologically if we put our minds to it.
Well, filmmaker Robert Stone, it's a pleasure to have you on this show, and we're really looking forward to watching Chasing the Moon on our own PBS station here, WJCT Television. So thanks for being with us.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Again, Chasing the Moon debuts tonight at 8 o'clock on WJCT Television. Much more still to come here on First Coast Connect. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Well, the Electro Lounge is spinning something really exciting Tuesday night. It's Turntable Tuesday. Station manager and show host David Luckin is here now to let us take a little bit of a preview listen. Good morning.
Oh, and it's almost as good as Neil Young. God, I could have listened to that all morning.
Yeah, that was gorgeous, a little Harvest music. Moon for Chasing
it
the Moon.
Sure is.
Sure.
We got a great album for tomorrow night's Electro Lounge Turntable Tuesday, the second album from the band. They're called The Band because that's who they were when they backed Bob Dylan, and they kept that name. They were just The Band.
The Band.
So we're going to hear some great music from them, things like Across the Great Divide, Rag Mama Rag, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. Just a great, great album. We're going to hear it on original 180-gram virgin vinyl. So it's a new release. It's not my original from 1969, but it's a good one.
Okay, and as we listen to a little bit of this album...
Well, it's not from this one. We've got a little bit of, I'm sorry to interrupt, a little bit of The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. It's a live version.
Okay,
so
let's take a listen.
If it's ready, we'll take a listen.
Now, let's
doesn't know that song, right?
That's right. Now, let's talk about the fact that after the band had incredible success, Robbie Robertson went on to have a great solo career
as well.
He sure
did. And just to insert, Joan Baez does a gorgeous version of this song, too, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down.
Turntable Tuesday on the Electro Lounge is a way for you to celebrate a whole album.
Exactly, from the first song to the last song, and whether it's brand new music from the local natives we played a few weeks ago to jazz, classic jazz albums, rock and roll albums, whatever we can find. But there is a standard you have to meet to play a whole album. You can't just play that one hit wonder album from 1973. You know, you got to find an album like this, or the Allman Brothers at Live at Fillmore, or Santana's Abraxas, or Miles Davis's Kind of Blue. You know, these iconic albums that'll just be kind of in our heads as long as we live, I think, for us crazy music people.
Sure. Now, how about the fact, too, that vinyl has really made something of a comeback lately?
It sold more in dollars. It made more money last year than people buying songs, because everyone has shifted now from the 99-cent purchase to just streaming services. So now vinyl is back. Sony has opened up plants. They're pressing vinyl all over the world. I get vinyl from all over the world, from England, from Germany, from America.
Why do you think it has recaptured the imagination of a whole new generation of music lovers?
Because it's old. No, I think there's always there always seems to be a part of every generation who reaches back and who doesn't want to be in the mainstream. So if vinyl seems cool, let's get into vinyl. Let's listen to the Beatles and the Beach Boys. What was that all about? Marvin Gaye. I was that way when I was a kid. When all my friends were listening to Hendrix, I was listening to early jazz, you know, Duke Ellington. So I think there's always a certain element of youth who says, yeah, enough Taylor. Give me something I don't know.
Something out of the vault.
Something old that's new to them.
It's new to them.
Yeah, and
that's
it sounds
right.
Good. Vinyl just sounds so warm and so nice. It's not as sterile as CDs. CDs are great. I mean, you want to hear a symphony, you hear every nuance, the triangle and everything. But for rock and roll, give me mono, give it to me on vinyl and hear it the way we kind of always heard it.
Well, you'll get the chance to hear this whole album on vinyl tomorrow night.
On Electro
On
Lounge.
The Electro Lounge.
Turntable Tuesday.
It's Turntable Tuesday, which is a staple of this long-running and amazing music program, proudly airing here on 89 FM for how many years
15
now?
Years.
15
I'm
years.
5 years ahead of you, Melissa.
That's right.
100 years older and 5 years ahead of you. Congratulations on your 10th.
That's right. But you've got quite a few on me. So tune into the Electro Lounge tomorrow night, 9:00. It's the band. And he's our own station manager, David Luckin. Always good to see you.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing us the music all the time. And in a moment, Culpepper, as the U.S. women's soccer team rolls to win the World Cup. Did you watch over the weekend? What are your thoughts about that? We'll talk about that and some more sports news and notes right after this. Keep listening.
Just like children sleeping, we could dream this night away.
Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings is one of Florida's best-loved writers. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit the front porch in Alachua County where The Yearling and Cross Creek were written. We'll discuss the St. Augustine Yacht Club and the Winter Park Advocate African American newspaper. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Puerto Rico is turning towards solar energy. Many living on the island had already lost trust in its electric system before Hurricane Maria hit 2 years ago.
Because it's weak, and the people start to thinking about trying to find a long-term solution, and the sun is one of them.
I'm Audie Cornish. The future of solar power in Puerto Rico, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Lisa Mullins. Cities across the world have new strategies to curb the use of plastic bags to reduce plastic waste. In Vancouver, one grocery store is going a step further. It's giving customers plastic bags with embarrassing messages written on them in hopes people will bring their own reusable bags instead. That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 2 here on 89.9 WJCT.
Long before NASA was asked to put a man on the moon, one engineer had already figured out how to get there. John Hobolt's ideas were at first dismissed, but he refused to be silent. He played a pivotal role, then he battled for recognition. The unheralded hero of Apollo, John Hobolt, the man who knew the way to the moon. That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sports Wrap-Up with Cole Pepper is sponsored by Black Sheep, Orsay, and Bellwether Restaurants.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, Sunday was a banner day for U.S. soccer.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper, too?
Did you watch the women's team win the World Cup? What an amazing moment in sports. Cole Pepper has some thoughts. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, it was not just amazing, but a record-setting women's World Cup for the U.S. The women's national team beat the Netherlands 2-0 to win the final in Lyon, France. Megan Rapinoe and Rose Lavelle scored the goals for the U.S. in the win. During the tournament, the U.S. set a record for the most goals scored in a World Cup game, 13, and in a World Cup tournament. It's the second straight World Cup for the U.S. and the fourth World Cup all time. That's the most among any country. Rapinoe won the Golden Boot as the leading scorer and the Golden Ball as MVP of the World Cup. They came in the as the favorites, and they left as champions. Just an impressive, dominant performance. There will be a lot made of the larger significance, I think, of this win by the U.S. women's national team. Let's start with this. It's certainly another opportunity to grow soccer in America, especially for girls, but not entirely, not just exclusively. A lot of girls will be inspired by this team for sure. A lot of boys will as well. Mm-hmm. As for the impact on the Women's Professional League, I'm not sure what kind of impact this is going to have. It may give the league a chance to promote more of its players, although a lot of the stars of this team play in Europe. Budweiser did take the opportunity, by the way, to push out a big social media campaign starting yesterday, saying that they have joined the NWSL as a major sponsor of that league, using the platform of the World Cup to sort of launch that message. And then there is the lawsuit that the women's team filed against U.S. Soccer. I think this can only help their cause. Forget about the win. There's a structure in place that's implemented by FIFA about, you know, how much teams get depending on their finish. And that's another conversation entirely. But it's clear that the popularity of the women's national team continues to rise. And there's a clear pay gap at play here that doesn't really have much of a strong leg to stand on. The U.S. players will earn $200,000 each for their win. That's not bad money, but under U.S. soccer structure, if the men did the same, they would have made over $1 million
each. It's a big gap.
It's a big gap. All this while the women are actually generating more revenue than the men have over the last 3 years. So that knocks that leg of the argument out from underneath itself. Megan Rapinoe, the captain and the Golden Boot and Golden Ball winner, certainly was very outspoken about this throughout the course of the tournament. And after winning the World Cup, Rapinoe certainly did not shy away from the spotlight yet again.
Everyone is ready for this conversation to move to the next step. I think we're done with the, are we worth it? Should we have equal pay? Is it, you know, is the market the same? Yada, yada. Everyone's done with that. Fans are done with that. Players are done with that. You know, in a lot of ways, I think sponsors and everyone's done with that. Let's get to the next point of what's next.
I think it speaks volumes about her as a person. I think, you know, Megan was built for this, built for these moments, built to be a spokesperson for others. You know, I've sat in a couple of presses with her, and she's just incredibly eloquent. I think speaks from her heart. And, you know, I think we need people like that in the game, to be honest, to call things for what they are.
That's Jill Ellis.
Head coach Jill Ellis. And how about her back-to-back championships?
Yeah, and Germany had done that once before. It's been done rarely in the men's World Cup, which is much older than the women's World Cup. But to have done what the U.S. has done now and to win four in the since the World Cup was implemented for the women, pretty impressive. And with Jill Ellis guiding this team with a lot of personalities, it's not just Megan Rapinoe. Carly Lloyd has a big personality. You've got a number of other players who certainly...
Alex Morgan,
although not quite as outspoken as some others. Julie Ertz is a very strong personality. She did such a great job of allowing their games to come out on the pitch, to allow them to express themselves on the pitch and off, while also maintaining a very sound tactical approach to what happened.
And here's the other question hanging over all of this now. Will they get an invitation to the White House? Because, of course, Megan Rapinoe famously said, I'm not bleeping going to the White House, and neither are my teammates. They don't like the president.
Well, we'll see. I think they will probably get an invitation because it's sort of, you know, part of what happens regularly. The president and the first lady both tweeted out congratulations yesterday, as did former President Barack Obama. I will point out that... the first lady tweeted out she needs a little tweak on the social media side. I think the she added Team USA, which is the Olympic team and not the U.S. women's national team. Small detail.
Yeah.
But listen, I think the television ratings showed that everybody that so many people enjoyed and followed this team. And there was certainly a lot of political conversation around it. So I would suspect that there will be an invitation coming soon.
They've transcended sports in an interesting way. They've become icons in the larger political culture now, too.
And one writer likened Megan Rapinoe to a modern-day Muhammad Ali. Mm-hmm. That's a big comparison, but I don't think it's all that far off the mark.
Well, let's celebrate their success, and we're out of time, but you can catch the rest of the sports news on our news partner, Channel 4, where you can catch Cole most nights on television and every Monday on this program. Follow him on Twitter as well, at Cole Pepper. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Brady Corum is our director today. We want your feedback. Send emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Have a great Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.